has TTIP finished? Is it dead in the water?
Well, it certainly looks that way. I mean, what with the two major players, the French and the Germans, saying they think that that's it, that does seem pretty clear. It's also, the timing is interesting because after the Brexit vote and the signal that maybe next year Article 50 will be triggered and Britain will begin its process of leaving the European Union. Britain was one of the enthusiasts for TTIP, and it looks to me as if, you know, in many ways, the French and the German are pleased to see the back of the Brits, and they're saying, well, actually, this agreement wasn't for us. And there are very good reasons why they would say that, because, you know, the Brussels itself is very, very much behind this. But I think it's fair to say the individual member states don't want anything to do with it, because effectively it means their own abolition. This is agreement which would give big corporations, many of which share different both sides of the transatlantic bridge, gives them the power to sue governments through the particular part of the agreement, which is, you know, this part of this TTIP.
Okay, so it looks pretty certain now that TTIP has actually, incredibly, come to an end. It's amazing, isn't it? We should be celebrating. But before we do go out on the street and dance, we should perhaps look more closely at the international situation, because there are other little things going on. There are other huge, in fact, transatlantic trade agreement negotiations taking place right now. One of them is called CETA, which is basically, it's called Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement between Canada and the EU. And the other one is called TISA, which is short for Trade in Services Agreement. Now, let's start talking about CETA, first of all. Do you know anything about this, Tony?
Yes. Well, I mean, like you, this is something that I've come across often through small campaign groups like New Economics Foundation doing the digging. Because the thing that unifies all these agreements, I'm sure Oliver would agree with me here, is they're all shrouded in secrecy. The idea is that because we have voted for various people, some of those people are European commissioners, actually, who we've never voted for. They seem to think that they have the executive authority and power to go and negotiate these things for us in secret without telling us what's going on. CETA is effectively a kind of TTIP for TTIP is between the United States and the EU. CETA is an equivalent between Canada and the EU. It's also being negotiated behind the scenes. And you mentioned the Trade in Services Agreement, TISA. Now, that is a global equivalent to this, and it's also being negotiated in total secret. So we really do have to ask questions about what is part of these.
Okay, let's just stick to CETA at the moment. Now, how far have negotiations gone? I mean, has the EU signed up for CETA or not?
No, not yet, but there are negotiations going on. The thing is, it's actually very difficult to find out how far the negotiations have gone. So it's a little bit like the various kinds of, I mean, say, for example, you've got a big IT contract going on, been signed, say, for the National Health Service here in Britain, for example. It's almost impossible to get progress reports on how that contract is going. And that's one of the main reasons cited for these contracts going to massive billions sometimes of money wasted, because the government doesn't want to admit when things aren't going well. They're really just trying to contain a PR situation rather than do any kind of honest negotiation. And the big common thread between all these agreements cannot be stressed enough. It's called the Investor State Dispute Settlement, ISDS, which has been looked into just over the last week or so very carefully by Tambi at BuzzFeed News. He's done a fantastic job. Really, really big pat on the back to him. I'm not sure if Oliver's seen these reports. One of them is called The Court That Rules the World. This is all about this ISDS. And he's explaining that the way these secret tribunals have worked out in various cases, often in developing world countries up till now, which show where this is all heading. And it's to do with a big corporate takeover, effectively banishing our democratic government.
Okay, but I still don't understand why that means that it's a threat to democracy. Tony, can you come in here, please?
Yeah, it's a really, really simple. As I said, this BuzzFeed article, these investigations on BuzzFeed have done a really good job in going into this. Effectively, what it does, it allows the corporations to sue governments that pass laws that affect their profits, but it doesn't allow governments to sue corporations. So it's a one-way street agreement. What it effectively means is that corporate lawyers, not our MPs and elected representatives in our legislatures, will be writing laws in the future. And I also want to point out about CETA that this is being affected badly by what's happened now with TTIP. So it looks as if this CETA deal will not be ratified. So I think this partly Brexit, the Brits moving out of the scene in the European Union, who were so much for TTIP, has almost been like a house of cards. These trade deals are starting to falter and collapse.
You can't just expect a country like China to trade with us if we don't offer China something. For example, if we don't offer Chinese nationals visas to live in countries, or we don't recognise their professional qualifications. Why should China trade with us or not with another country? I mean, you have to give and take. And services, service industry is different from goods, physical goods. It's something that you build, you get by building trust with other countries and so on. To expect other countries to trade with us without us giving anything in a way, isn't that being a bit kind of, you know, a bit unrealistic?
Two examples of things that would change. For example, it would enable US corporations to take over National Health Service contracts. And also, it would there's a little known food regulation, which is to do with irradiation of food, which is allowed in the United States without labeling. That could then be brought into Europe under this agreement. And people just simply don't want their food irradiated. It's just about extending the shelf life, and it's not about people's health.
They're not having that. So what you're saying is that everybody's possible potential partner for TISA, apart from Russia and China, is that right?
Well, they're happy to trade, the Chinese, for example. They're happy to trade with us. But what they're not happy is for this race to the bottom in regulation. And that's what these trade agreements represent. This is why the Chinese refuse to even get involved in the TISA, and the Russians have too, because they are not going to have US corporations trying to regulate their markets. And that's what this is really all about, I think, is they're not really interested in trade. Free trade is pretty much happening anyway. What they want is they want to control the regulation. And that effectively means a bit like with the banks, you know, the regulators controlling their own regulation. And that what that means, well, we know what that means, is a total disaster. It means that you've got a kind of corporate takeover, what they call in economic circles and in academia, regulatory capture. So where the big corporations don't have to actually be regulated at all, they control their own regulations. And of course, the Chinese and the Russians are not having that.
I'd like to change the subject slightly and come back to the UK. Now, before Brexit, basically, we thought that leaving the EU would mean bye-bye to TTIP, didn't we, in the UK? But I think a lot of us who voted to leave, we forgot that actually the UK was, as Tony said earlier on, one of the key supporters of TTIP. And how on earth did we manage to convince ourselves that Brexited UK would then leave TTIP? Quite the opposite. Surely the UK suffering economically, hungry for deals, is more likely to come to an arrangement with the United States.
Well, look, General de Gaulle saw Britain as the unsinkable aircraft carrier of the United States in Europe, and that's one of the reasons he didn't want Britain to be part of the European Union, or as it was, the common market all those years ago. And in many ways, he's right. The American influence in Britain is tremendous, you know, particularly with the Cameron government. We're still to see just how much Theresa May's government's going to be doing that. But look, let's just look for a minute at this new department that's been created by Theresa May, with Liam Fox as the new Secretary of State in charge of it, the International Trade Department for International Trade. I mean, Fox has got a terrible track record, having brought this guy, Adam Werety, back in 2011. He was sacked because he brought this guy into the Ministry of Defence, many believed to have been working for the Israelis, right into the middle of the heart of the British defence establishment, and he was removed as a result. The allegation was that Werety was actually trying to cook up a war with the Iranians. You know, so this is not the guy to be putting in charge of all this and to trust with all this, I think. But Fox is very right-wing. I think he's going to go completely against the wishes of the British people and try and ram this TTIP through, realising that the Germans and the French are not on his back anymore.
OK, it's a win-win situation, isn't it, for the States? Because the UK out of the EU means it's more likely to join a TTIP-type organisation, because it doesn't have the EU to stop it joining, right? And if it was to remain in, it would be useful to try to persuade the whole of the EU to join. Tony, do you agree with me?
Well, it's quite possible. And also, of course, they're looking at TISA. Maybe the EU will sign TISA. Maybe the Brits will sign something which is more akin to TTIP. You know, so I think that's a really important way of looking at this, is that it may be that they're kind of running these TISA agreements in the knowledge and understanding that that's going to be what they're going to get in the end. But look, let's take a step back for a minute, because what's being created here with these various trade agreements, it's not just free trade. It's to do with controlling the regulation of industry and banking, etc., through government. And these corporations effectively are setting up a kind of feudal system where chief executives of the banks, the media, big pharmaceutical companies and food giants are the new feudal barons. And what they're doing is they're using this investor-state dispute procedure to give themselves, that is executives of these big firms, these big banks, get outs from the law. So say, for example, a big bank like HSBC is caught doing money laundering, the executives will be protected and only a few rogue traders may be prosecuted, and they'll get a fine, which is a piffling fine compared to the amount of money they've made through money laundering. So this is the world we're going into. It's a kind of medieval feudal world with these big media barons, and you know, they're the most worrying in a way, running the whole show.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, that the so-called democratic countries of the world are sort of, in a way, less democratic in terms of trade than the so-called non-democratic countries. It's a bit of a mix-up, isn't it, Tony?
It certainly is. It's contradictory. And I think that there is a certain amount of free speech allowed, of course. But then you have to look at the media, big media corporations and their involvement with these big trade agreements, which they have been pushing for, most of them, because they stand to benefit. You know, they can then start regulating their own industry, which is what they love to do, of course. They don't really want ordinary people or victims, survivors, if you can call them that, of media, bad media coverage to be involved in any kind of regulation. So there is a certain amount of free speech. As that's happening, also, the media is being focused into fewer and fewer hands, fewer and fewer voices all the time. And most of them, of course, are pointing their fingers, for example, at wars like the Syria war, which they want to talk about, not at things like Yemen, which is far where they're far more culpable. I mean, for example, the British arms industry supplying massive amounts of bombs that are killing children, bombing hospitals, schools and that sort of thing. They don't want to talk about that kind of war. So the media is a big part of this, and they're big corporations with an interest in all this too.